From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, December 8th, 2025. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Ask anybody, they'll tell you. We need to get things officially launched with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. I like this. It says, a neurotic man is a man who builds a castle in the sky. A psychotic is the man who lives in it. Yeah, you better believe it. And a psychiatrist collects the rent.
Staggers the imagination.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted history.
Oh, boy.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
That'll be good.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your twisted history.
All right.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, sure. Well, kids, it was on this day in 1940, Britain introduced food rationing due to the war. And then again, it was, after all, British food, so what they couldn't have, they couldn't miss, right?
Yeah.
And it was on this day in 1964, President Johnson declared a war on poverty in the United States. That was 61 years ago. We can all see how well the war is going, right? It's like Will Rogers said, we're the only country in the world that's going to the poorhouse in a motor car. The only difference between now and back in the 1930s and Will Rogers' day is these days the motor car we go to the poorhouse in is air conditioned.
You were lucky. Extremely lucky.
Well, the big news yesterday was what actually took place on Monday, and that was the announcement on the part of Justin Trudeau, Premier of Canada, that he was going to resign. Now, his resignation can't really become effective until they find a suitable replacement, which I put that term in quotes. And they've got some good politicians up there in Canada. But like down here in the United States, they're often suppressed and oppressed by their media. Oh, yeah, the Canadian media is no better than our media. They're all a bunch of damned liberals. And they champion people like Trudeau. But even the media up there in Canada has had to kind of backtrack a little bit because Justin Trudeau has proven to be such a god-awful premier. Now, naturally, Donald Trump took to Truth Social to comment on this, and he proposed, as actually he did sometime last week, that Canada should join the United States as our 51st state. Now, Trudeau, when he stepped down, cited internal issues within his party, but Trump argued that merging the two countries would benefit both countries. I could see where that might be the case, yes. Although on the surface, it sounds rather absurd. First of all, it would eliminate tariffs. It would lower taxes for Canadians. I'm sure they'd love that. And it would offer greater security from international threats. So again, sounds beneficial, doesn't it? Even though on the surface it sounds absurd. This could turn out to be a very good deal. And maybe whoever takes Trudeau's spot would agree to it. But here's the post that Trump made on Truth Social. Many people in Canada love being the 51st state. The United States can no longer suffer the massive trade deficits and subsidies that Canada needs to stay afloat. Justin Trudeau knew this and resigned. If Canada merged with the U.S., there would be no tariffs, taxes would go way down, and they would be totally secure from the threat of the Russian and Chinese ships that are constantly surrounding them. Together, what a great nation it would be. Well, the way RT News, that's RT, Russian television, said U.S. President-elect Donald Trump has suggested that Canada should formally become the 51st American state after Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau stepped down from party leadership. Trudeau resigned on Monday, citing internal battles in the Liberal Party. He will remain a caretaker prime minister until the party elects a new leader, heading into a new parliamentary election due before the end of October. Now, Trudeau's resignation appears to have been driven at least in part by Trump's threat of a 25% tariff on goods crossing from both Canada and Mexico. If Canada merged with the U.S., there would be no tariffs. Canadians would pay lower taxes and both would be totally secure. So basically, RT is rehashing what I just told you earlier. But I don't know. It'd be interesting to find out what the atmosphere is inside Canada right now. I mean, how are the Canadian people looking at this? I bet you some kind of fireworks are going on up there. And if I get some kind of an inkling as to what the people of Canada are saying, and from what I understand, almost half of Canadians are in favor of this. But here again, there's nothing scientific about that figure. It's just kind of a figure that was pulled out of the wind somewhere. So as soon as I find out something in that, I'll be happy to pass it along to you. I don't know if you're familiar with Anna Kasparian, who she is, but for many, many years, she co-hosted a program called Young Turks with a fellow who's a Turkish-American. His name is Cenk Uygur. I think that's how you pronounce his last name, Uygur. Cenk Uygur. And these two would go on and on in their podcasts every day, just railing about how conservatives just are idiots and that only the liberals know what they're doing and the Democrats know what they're doing. But little by little, this was a gradual process. Both of them became very, very critical of the Democrat Party and Democrats themselves. You know, there's the party entity and then, of course, the individuals who make up the party. Those are two different entities, but they seem to be very much like-minded. And what's happening here is these are just two more examples, but Anna Kasparian in particular, she's been far more vocal than Uygur has. And she has, just in front of God and everybody, become very much red-pilled. And it's a fascinating process to watch. I never get tired of it. I've seen a lot of people go this route. And there'll be a lot more because, face it, the Democrat Party is no longer dealing in reality. So the other day, Anna was on with Jillian Michaels on her podcast. I forgot the name of it here. I'll try to get that for you. But Jillian Michaels, you know, the fitness guru, and Jillian Michaels became red-pilled some time ago already. And so I guess she had Anna Kasparian on as a guest to try to explain what is happening. Now, this is happening nationwide. It's already happened, really, but it's a continuing process. And as Donald Trump succeeds in getting a lot of his proposals for this country through, I mean, once they reach reality, for instance, the economy gets better. We start focusing on education a little more. Once you start to feel it in your pocketbook, and you will, but that may take a couple of years, certainly did for Ronald Reagan. Who knows? We're dealing with Donald Trump. He is not Ronald Reagan. But as the reality sets in of what's happening in this country, this process of red-pilling people is going to continue. The far crazy way out there leftists, you're never going to bring them over here. Nor do we want them. They're going to be nothing more than just rabble rousers and bitchers, and we don't need that. But here's what Anna Kasparian had to say to Jillian Michaels about the straw that broke the camel's back. Listen to this.
In 2022, it was around March. I was walking my dog. It was not quite dark yet, but the sun was setting. As I'm walking my dog, I see these two guys that were just kind of like moving around weirdly. You know, they seemed kind of manic and their clothes were tattered. So I knew that they were probably homeless. And I also knew that they're probably on something just based on like the twitchy way they were acting. But living in LA, I mean, there's homeless people everywhere, right? So I've never had problems. I didn't think anything of it. But as I was bending down to pick up my dog's mess, one of the guys like grabs me by my hips and he had an erection.
Oh God.
And just starts like humping me. And I didn't know what to do. Like, I was terrified. I didn't have a weapon on me. Yep. Like, I had no way of defending myself. I didn't know how far it was going to go because it's two guys. I'm by myself with my little dog. It was one of the most terrifying things ever, because I'm pretty good at defending myself. In that moment, I just knew there was no option.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And luckily, he stopped and they just laughed at me and walked away as they were laughing at me. And so there was the fear and then the humiliation and weirdly shame. Like, I felt ashamed for some reason. And it was awful. And it was really taking a toll on my mental health, because I have to walk my dog, right? So at least two or three times a day, I'm going outside kind of scared. And so I opened up about this on the show, not really thinking much of it. And before I know it, I'm starting to get these messages, and it's like really, really harsh stuff. And it's about how you are painting a picture of the homeless community. You know, how could you be like this? You know, these are your unhoused neighbors and they need help. A few people accused me of being racist when I had never disclosed the race of the individuals who did this to me. And in fact, they were white. And so, like, when they started accusing me of being racist, I'm like, wait a minute, why are you assuming that the people who did this?
Of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you might have a problem here.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, that woke me up.
Obviously, the Democrat Party believes that we should accept this kind of behavior as just normal. All these homeless people, all of these people just roaming the streets and getting free drugs, all these people going to these little locations in places like L.A. and San Francisco where they can get free needles and continue to shoot up without treating the problem. We should accept this as normal. This is the new normal. And so what you heard there, you heard a hardcore left-winger who has been red-pilled, and she's not willing to accept this. And there are millions of people just like her out there who, for some reason or another, maybe feel a little intimidated about trying to come out as having been red-pilled. But there's going to come a time for each of these people when they say, I have had enough. No more of this. Now, in yesterday's podcast, we talked about Curtis Sliwa up there, the founder of the Guardian Angels back in 1979. He's bringing that bunch back again because, for some reason, the Democrat administration in New York City, can't seem to see fit to have the cops patrol subway cars. And, of course, a lot of crime, just awful crime, is taking place on the subway cars. And Curtis Sliwa, in the soundbite that we had yesterday, he mentioned that this is what he calls the Daniel Penny effect. When people see trouble, when people see a troublemaker on board a subway, because of what happened to Daniel Penny getting thrown into court and having to prove himself innocent, people are no longer willing to get involved. They're not willing to help people in need of help. You know, and again, who was it who prosecuted Daniel Penny? Alvin Bragg, a Democrat, a George Soros Democrat, which is why that just really pissed me off the other day when George Soros got that Presidential Medal of Freedom. Or is that Medal of Freedom, Medal of Honor, Medal of Freedom? Okay. And, I mean, this is it. The American people have had it. And Donald Trump, right there, Donald Trump, is the person who's going to turn this around. This is the faith that the American people have in that man. Donald, turn it around for us. Let's get this country back on the right path. And, Glenn Beck mentions this a lot. One of the things this country really needs to do, if we want to improve ourselves, and if as a nation, if we want to get out of the darkness that we have been wallowing in for so many years, we need to become a religious nation again. Now, I'm not going to tell you what religion to follow, but, you know, I really believe this. I mean, I'm not a guy who goes to church on Sundays. I don't, but I'm pretty strong in my faith. And I believe that people of faith, regardless of what faith they follow, people of faith generally are better people They have a reason for living. They have a belief in life after death, which I think is a good thing because that makes you a better person in life. Think about that. It has a psychological effect that benefits not just the individual, but the people around that individual. Family, friends, co-workers. And this is something we as a nation need to focus on again. And I was stunned back during Donald Trump's first administration that he wasn't, as president of the United States, afraid to mention God. 2 days after President Trump's stunning victory in the election, Susie Wiles was tapped as his White House chief of staff, a move signaling the president-elect's desire for order and discipline in his second term. It's like I've mentioned before, that first term of Donald Trump's gave him a hell of an education. And the time that he has spent in the last 4 years preparing for this election, the man has done his homework. Now, since the appointment of Wiles, she's wasted no time laying down the law, issuing a firm warning to administration officials that internal strife would not be tolerated under her leadership. I like this. In her first interview since being appointed to the role, she outlined her vision for a West Wing free of the factionalism and infighting that plagued Trump's first term. She said, "I don't welcome any people who want to work solo or be a star. My team and I will not tolerate backbiting, second-guessing inappropriately, or drama. These are counterproductive to the mission. Amen." Now, during the early days of Trump's first presidency, the West Wing often devolved into a chaotic environment. I don't know if you remember that or not. I do. And it was rife with power struggles, little power struggles. Oh, the leaks. That was just absolutely the worst. And, of course, along with it, competing agendas. And Wiles, who wasn't part of the administration at the time, now appears determined to avoid a repeat of those dynamics. And she's setting her sights beyond the often discussed first 100 days of a new administration. Basically, she's dismissing it as an artificial metric, which is an excellent point. She believes the truly pivotal time is going to span from the inauguration to the 2026 midterms. And during this key 2-year period, with Republicans holding full control of Congress, try to remember that. This is something we haven't seen in a long, long time. It's all about moving forward aggressively. And she stressed a strategy that involves getting off to a quick start and staying on that pace, together with an expectation of excellence every day. I like this lady. She explained that the agenda is focused on engendering public support. In other words, and she didn't say that, these are my words. In other words, every day you're going to continue red-pilling people. Let's get them on board. Let's get full support. I mean, yeah, we got the House, we got the Senate, we've got the Supreme Court. This is all well and good. But do we have the hearts and minds of the American people? We've got to have this. We've got it now. But there's nothing etched in granite that says it's going to stay that way. That's a job you do every day. So she's on this mission to engender public support to fulfill Trump's commitments and policy goals. And these include boosting energy production, amen, rolling back redundant and burdensome regulations, keeping taxes low. Actually, we need to get them low. I think they're too high. Cutting government waste through DOGE. I love this idea. And DOGE, you know, D-O-G-E, Department of Government Efficiency. And most importantly, scaling the border problem down. And you do that just by sealing the border and deporting criminals who are in this country illegally. So, quoting her, she says, "I have every hope that the 47 administration will not have the same number of attempts to put sand in the gears. We're off to a fast start with congressional work, hiring the best people, preliminary discussion with heads of state, fine-tuning his policy agenda, and planning for the first 100 days. And she did an interview with Axios Mark Caputo, the advisor, Susie Wiles, again, is her name. She highlighted Trump's hands-on involvement, explaining, and quoting her, "He knows much more about the way Washington institutions work, especially the need to have people who were serving be both competent and loyal. He's taken a keen interest in personnel and has personally interviewed and hired all the cabinet and many sub-cabinet hires." And regarding the transition process, she said, "He engaged fully with hiring. He interviewed the cabinet leadership and made it clear his priorities for White House and agency staff. We set timelines and held ourselves accountable for the deadlines we set. President Trump 47 will have the finest public servants available with great work ethic, a demonstrated ability to break down bureaucratic walls to help hold the bloated federal workforce accountable, have fealty to the conservative and common sense principles that President Trump ran and won on, and be determined to make a difference during their time serving. We're cognizant of a turning clock. Much to do. The West Wing staff is a mix of new and veterans. Many are young. All are prepared to work punishing hours. To my core, I believe in teamwork. Anyone who cannot be counted on to be collaborative and focused on our shared goals isn't working in the West Wing." Wow, what is not to love about that? And lastly, the significant presence of Floridians in the administration was noted with by Axios. They asked about that, and she proudly said, "Florida people overpopulate the leadership of the administration, and we would not have it any other way." A few weeks before high school graduation, Alicia Ortiz had some terse words for Hartford, Connecticut Board of Education members at their meeting on May 7th of this year. She said, "I felt like they didn't care about my future. I truly believe that you do not value me as a student and as a human being, and that you don't care about my education." Now, Ortiz was still awarded a diploma by Hartford High School and accepted at the University of Connecticut, Hartford, despite never learning to read or write. And this is according to a lawsuit she's filed now against the Hartford Board of Education. She just filed this back in December. Due to language limitations, Ortiz had required an individualized learning plan since the first grade. And this is according to the lawsuit. It said she was supervised by a team of case managers and special education teachers during her entire academic career. By middle school, most of her academic skills were at kindergarten or first grade levels. Think about that. All of this is in the lawsuit, by the way. Now, a school social worker issued a report on Ortiz's situation during the end of her junior year on May 23rd of 2023. And the report stated that Ortiz consistently and persistently advocated for reading and writing supports. Reported that she couldn't write and could barely hold a pencil. Reported that she struggled to sit and write in class. And that she had to take work home to use talk to text on her computer. Well, the report, which has been published in the Epoch Times, excellent report, also notes that the Epoch Times people contacted Hartford Public Schools for a statement, but didn't get doodly squat. Now, recent state assessment results that show low literacy scores for students across the country, along with high graduation rates, suggest that Ortiz is not an anomaly. Public school literacy challenges, complicated by language barriers, and then you've got your special education requirements and the use of assistive technology that can circumvent the learning process, could be a hot topic for education policymakers and legislators in the months ahead. Now, Jason Dudash, West Coast director of the Freedom Foundation think tank, said historical standards for reading and writing are eroding. To receive continued state aid for special education in other areas, school districts must show some indication of performance improvement. And because the have more control over graduation rates than state standardized test scores, the gap can become pronounced. Says it goes back to the incentive structures of government. Graduation doesn't mean anything. You've turned a diploma into little more than a participation trophy. Now, in Oregon, students are no longer required to demonstrate reading or writing proficiency to graduate from high school. This, if it weren't so tragic, it would be laughable. The State Board of Education in September of 23 suspended state assessments of those essential skills through the 27-28 academic year. Imagine that. A 2022 State Senate report ahead of the board decision made several recommendations to the legislature and State Board of Education to consider in making Oregon's graduation requirements mirror this same commitment to equity, access, and inclusion. See, that's a statewide disease over there. The people of Oregon are out of their freaking minds. You think California's nuts? Oh, man, you ain't seen Oregon. And the report noted, although graduation rate trends are moving in a positive direction, substantial inequities remain, such as experiences of systemic bias, limited access to adequate educational resources and educational guidance, and support from practitioners such as school counselors and teachers, and blah, blah, blah. But did you get that? Although graduation rates or graduation rate trends are moving in a positive direction, ... And that's all that they're concerned about, graduation rates. But what about what these people graduate with? And I'm not talking about the diploma. I'm talking about what's between their ears. What did they learn in high school? And it's turning out they didn't learn doodly squat. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and Dustin Nickerson.
Thank you guys for being here. This is a treat. My name is Dustin. I'm 36. I'm not handling my 30s very well because I'm realizing 30s is not old, but it is almost old. Like, you're right there, you know? And some of you are in your 30s. You're like, that's not true. I'm still young. Yeah, the first stage of grief, denial. You'll come along. It's not. You got a little young in you and a little old. You're in transition, you know? Like, I still get excited about concerts, but I also get excited about Kohl's cash. I'm in transition. You understand me? And everything changes. You can get hurt doing anything in your 30s. Anything is dangerous. I play basketball once a week. I texted a friend my age, and I said, hey, are you going to be here this week? And he said, no. I threw out my back. And I said, how? And he said, folding a sheet. And I wasn't surprised. I was mad at him because we needed the numbers. I was like, come on, man, you're 36. You know you can't be doing that by yourself anymore. You free soloed a sheet. Are you insane? You need a spotter for that kind of action. Everything about health becomes much more challenging. That's what it is. And even your goals change, you know? Like in your 20s, you say things like, I want to look hot naked. And in your 30s, you're like, I want to look pretty good dressed. I'm not trying to get in good shape. I'm trying to get in a shape that nobody comments on. That's all. It's hard. Like, I work out a lot. Ta-da! This took a lot of effort. I'm disappointed, too. I asked my wife, I was like, honey, I work out all the time. Does it even look like a workout? She goes, you know, it looks like you work out, but, like, also that you never miss a cheat day. All right. That's accurate, but hurtful. I had a friend, I asked him, like, hey, man, well, all my gyms are closed, you know, the pandemic of gyms are closed. What do you recommend I do? And he texted me, and he goes, you know what, for a guy like you, already insulting. He's like, you know, you can just do a lot of body weight exercises. That's so mean when you think about it. Dude, you are so out of shape if you just lifted your arm. That's all I need from you. And don't overdo it. If that's too much, use your other arm to do it. Bend at the knees, buddy. I think what it is you kind of like get turned off by like the people who get overly preachy about their diets, because it's not one diet. We all know what dieting really is. Every day, we all have to make a choice. Am I going to eat healthy or am I going to be happy?
Get on out there and make it a great Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.